I'm listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, January 30th, 2025, and apparently it's Snowpocalypse Day. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Cheesh, Hawa, Tuxik Newsom, Salama, thank you. It's a perfect day to curl up in your blanket and join the conversation. Today, we've got playwrights, three of them to be exact, all local, who have plays this weekend in the Alaska Theater Festival Radio Plays. We chat with them about writing for radio, the subjects they chose, and what makes radio plays an enticing endeavor. The Juno Libraries is here with event updates and book recommendations for February, and local artist Christine Carpenter is on tap at the Alaskan Brewery. We get a taste of what's in store. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin katka ke jin talk anachaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
A little Portugal the Man with Feel It Still. That's tomorrow night, dancing our house together, the Clink It On Eve Tour 2025 with Portugal the Man, Yatsin, and Samantha Crane. It's all part of the Point House in Sitka Revitalization Project. For more information, you can go to pointhouse.org. Unfortunately, the shows tomorrow night are sold out, but that means you can stay at home and begin your adventure with the Alaska Theater Festival Radio Plays. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tomorrow night, January 31st, and running through Sunday, February 2nd, KTOO and Theater Alaska, in association with Juno Ghostlight Theater, are broadcasting the Alaska Theater Festival Radio Plays. It's 11 productions, 10 of them live and original. Many of the writers are local, and the festival involves dozens and dozens of actors, sound designers, Foley artists, and behind-the-scenes crews. The full schedule of plays is available online at ktoo.org. The plays will be broadcast on KTOO 104.3, KAUK 91.7, and online at ktoo.org. So get your listening party scheduled and grab the hot cocoa and snacks for some good old-fashioned radio plays. Or you can watch it all go down live in the studio here at KTOO. You can get tickets for the live performances at ktoo.org, and you can find out more about the companies involved at their websites, theateralaska.org or junoghostlight.com. Today, we welcome three of the playwrights to the studio. I'm honored to have them brave the weather and join me here today. We have Mary Ellefson, writer of The Silver Wolf, performing Saturday, February 1st at 5 p.m. Hetty Laverne, writer of The Case of the Sultry Songstress, a detective so-and-so mystery, performing on Saturday night, February 1st at 7 p.m. And Frank Henry Koshkatas, writer of The Spirit of the Valley, performing Sunday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. Whew, that's a mouthful. Gwyneth Cheesh, Hatyadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Well, I just learned a lot.
It's a huge festival. This is a giant undertaking. This is involving, I think it's like over 60 or something people. It's a lot of people involved in this production. There's tons of actors. There's Foley artists. There's all of you writers who are involved. And what's really cool, I just want to mention this too, on Saturday, between the 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. shows, we'll actually be on the air with Juno Afternoon on a Saturday, wild, and we'll get to talk to the other playwrights involved in this. That are having their plays, I think, all done on Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. So we'll talk about that on Saturday. But first, I want to talk to each of you about these plays that you wrote. Oh, I also should mention that Florida Lino, artistic director of Theater Alaska, is running around the studio in the background taking photos for social media. So that's good. And if we need any other details, he might jump in here. But let's talk about these plays. I know that some of them, I know, Hedy, you wrote yours specifically for the radio. Frank and Mary, did you both write yours with radio in mind?
Yeah. No, I didn't. no, I wrote mine a number of years ago when I was down in La Jolla. I wrote it, and the idea was to be a theater for youth play. And then when the pandemic happened, and then Perseverance decided to do it as a star production, part of their summer, I don't remember what it is, theater for
kids. Theater Rendezvous, yeah.
And so they did it for that, and we're like, huh, this actually might be a thing. So I think the following year, they asked if we wanted to do a full production with actors on a Zoom production, and if I direct it. So I did. I helped direct it, or I directed it and put it up on Zoom, and Florida Lino was asking which if I had any plays that might work on the radio, and I go, you know what, this play has some flexibility to it, so we might as well try it on the radio too.
It adapted pretty well. Yeah. That was done during the pandemic, right? The production.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
I remember my partner was in it and was performing it in our living room.
I remember
with a green screen. While I was watching football.
We saw you army crawling in the background.
Yeah, right. Trying to get up the stairs, yeah. And Mary, your writing of this play, was it specifically written for the radio?
Well, that's a really good question. That's why I'm kind of hiding from Florida Lino right now. About a month ago, I was at a feedback session for another piece I'm working on, and Florida Lino sort of told me my radio play was late. And I said, I thought it's due February 1st. And he's like, no, that's actually the day that it gets, you know, produced live. And I was like, oh, okay, then. So anyway, it's been awesome.
I feel
it's like, for me, my second radio play back in the 90s when most of you weren't alive. We had Invisible Theater. Well, we had Invisible Theater at Perseverance.
The 1990s?
Yeah. No, 1890s. Oh, okay. I'm talking centuries
barely
ago. Anyway,
just a couple years old.
So
yeah.
This is my second time. And it's been really, it's like, what I like about writing is when a director and actors and designers take it, it's better, and it comes back at you in a way that you didn't know. And so it's been super fun these last 2 weeks.
That's cool.
And also, I really, gunas chish to K2 and to the theaters involved for making this happen and for really pushing me into a place where I get to use the word I love in my play, agog.
And Hedy, you wrote yours specifically for the radio as well. What's it like to write a radio play versus a live stage play?
For me, it is a lot more opportunity to move around into different settings. So I always, when I've written plays, think about, okay, what can we put on stage? And I'm very limited in my my theater, Juno Ghostlight Theater. I'm on the board for that. We're small, so we usually try to do single set or black box or something like that. But I love big, vibrant sets and being able to create awesome worlds like that. So on the radio, you don't have that limitation. You can set the stage however you want. So I was able to move us around and make a big old nightclub and stuff like that. So a big mansion at one scene. So that's fun.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And were you thinking about sound?
Totally. I think for me, it's I was pretty aware of the fact that sound was going to play a different thing. But I could also have like a castle burst open. I could have magic in a way. That's what I love about this piece. It was inspired by a residency I did at Juno Community Charter School about a decade ago, but it's actually taken so many lefts and rights that it's a little unrecognizable now to that, except for the word agog that's still there that I love. And there's a forest, but it's called Tungus. Like, I set the whole thing in Douglas. But what I heard a lot, like, it's interesting to hear to you, because I was like, okay, this can happen really quickly because I have a narrator, and I also have these kids that, I don't know, there's a little bit of magic happening. So, yeah, sound was really big. And when I sat down with Roblin Davis, who's my director, he's like, well, how do you hear this? And I thought, well, isn't that what you helped me do? You know? And I think all the sound in our piece is live, which is going to be a really cool, fresh, and a spontaneous, as well as sort of orchestrated challenge.
Yeah, it's kind of the fun thing about radio plays. It's like reading a book, but it's, you know, the worlds can expand, and really it's your imagination as you're listening to be able to see these things in your mind.
Well, you use the word old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, I'm thinking it's kind of new-fashioned.
Well,
like,
let's hope so.
Yeah.
It's nice that
he was talking about
back.
The drink.
I'm just glad it's coming back because I really enjoy radio plays. I think that's really cool. And I do want to mention, too, that the afternoon on Saturday when Mary's plays are going up at 5 p.m. or Mary's plays going up, there's also going to be some student-written plays. Ryan Conroe did a residency a few weeks back in December, and some students at the high schools wrote some plays as a class. And so we're going to get to hear those in addition to Mary's play on Saturday afternoon. That's the only one that isn't available to be watched live in the studio. The other plays you can get tickets for and watch them in the studio on Saturday night, and then both of the productions on Sunday. And then Friday night is a recording, a replay of Juno Ghostlight's production from last year called The War of the Worlds. So that'll play on Friday night at 7 o'clock for people who want to tune in and who don't have tickets to the Dancing Our House Together concert. So that's kind of fun. That's kind of cool. Okay, so I want to talk about each of your plays individually, but before I do that, I wanted to find out from each of you, just in terms of like your writing process, how do you go about writing a play? I know that Frank and Mary, you've both been writing plays for a long time, and I think Hetty, you've been writing sketches and different things like that, but have you written a full play before like this?
This is the longest one I've
okay.
written. Yeah, I've written one acts and sketches and stuff like that. So yeah, this is my first full.
Awesome. So tell me, what is your writing process like? Do you do it late at night? Do you get inspired? Like, what inspires you to write? When do you write? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've always been somebody who thinks a long time before I actually sit down and write. I don't like write a little bit and then go back to it. I'll formulate in my head and create scenes for maybe a whole week before I'll actually sit down and do it. And then it just kind of spills out. And I usually put on like an ambiance room on YouTube to like set the tone. So for this one, because it's a detective noir type parody, I put on like noir like saxophone and like had like a room with like a detective type backdrop. And so I kind of felt like I was in that world. So
nice.
That was really fun. And then because I come from an improv background, dialogue is very much like creating full voice for each character is really important for me. So that helps me make sure that they all sound like unique people instead of all one type of way of talking.
That's cool. I was wondering if you had like a little, you know, the typewriter sound in the background while you're writing, you know, like that would have been kind of fun too. That's kind of interesting because old-timey. Frank, what's your writing process like?
It kind of varies play to play. This one had a lot of inspiration from when I was working in Cititi Rai in Glacier Bay. I was a cultural guide in there. And actually, there's the story about Costine, who calls Sitlane, the big glacier in, like a dog. And Costine, we found out the first day of rehearsal, is one of the characters, Jill. Her Tlingit name is Costine, and that's what she was named after. And so and she's in this production as well, so that's amazing. So I was kind of inspired by that, and at the time there was a big movement going around about like getting rid of straws and litter and the effect on the environment and microplastics. And so that had a big inspiration on it. And I think I was playing Zelda at the time. And so the structure was a lot inspired by Zelda. And so for all those things sort of came together. And my writing process a lot of time is just thinking about what I'm going to write. And then the writing itself is very short. This one I think I did in 3 days or something like that. So it like, but like the process of me laying there thinking about like what it could be and what it could be about, I think is really... really what drives it. And then when I finally think I have a pretty good structure on what it's going to look like, a good outline, then I sit down and I fill it in with dialogue.
That's kind of cool. So you both kind of let it percolate a little bit.
Yeah.
And
then
it like,
yeah, the improv.
Then you get it down on the paper. And Mary, what about you? What is your write? Are you an up early in the morning and write 10 pages, or do you do it as you're inspired to write?
Well, that's a really good question. It's really cool to listen to other people talk about it. For me, I have a journal, and I journal every morning, but when you say, how do you write morning? Then you already answered my question. And morning early, and as my family now knows, the door is shut. And currently I'm working on two different plays. This one, I'm going to kind of echo Frank a little bit here. This one I had to write really fast, and I knew that, and I loved that. And I was like, make it fun. Just make it fun. And I had a few ideas in my mind, and Fleur-Lino Ixnay had a couple of them. So, no, I just had to figure out what my boundaries were. So to do this one, I was like, man, I got to get into the head of a 9-year-old. So I went and hung out with Shona and Otis Osterholt and asked Otis a bunch of questions, because that's how I learned it wasn't dance the gritty, it's hit the gritty. I mean, the things I had to learn from a 9-year-old prince's perspective, which I thought it's not going to be a princess. We're going to have a prince here. And so this particular piece I got to play with and have fun. The other piece I'm working on right now is I do a lot of interview-based work in town, and I've spent the last 7 months talking with various people at various intersections of their life with death, dying, and community conversations. So that's actually been profound, and in a different way, I've had to listen to my interviews, and I've had to hear what are people saying to me. And I do a lot of sort of tending to that listening to hear what people have been saying. And that process has been very different. And I want to say this in a way that I hope is respectful to both pieces. It's a more set in stone sacred. This one, I'm like, boy, if there's laughter around me as I'm writing The Silver Wolf, a.k.a. Rose Lupus, that's been cool too. Like I can handle some background.
Yeah.
And then what I really like in my work, as soon as I can, is I like to hear it. I'm thinking about your work with character, because I can create dialogue, but I need to hear it, and I need other people to help me hear that.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of cool. I took a guess at the morning because I know you're a runner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I figured, like, that's a good time for you.
Well, the world doesn't pollute my head. I really get impacted by the world.
Yeah.
And, yeah, especially now I do. So, yep.
Well, that's cool. Well, let's talk about each of these plays. I want to start. We'll go in order of when they're actually performing. So I'm going to start with you, Mary, in terms of The Silver Wolf. Can you tell us a little bit about what your play is about?
Oh, well, I think you just need to listen. No,
it's about 25 minutes.
About 26 minutes, I think. It's about a young boy who, something magical happens to the young boy who is locked in his room in his castle on the 6th Street of Douglas on his 9th birthday. Rose Lupin has been the prince and has been listening to the wolves outside. He's been listening to his friends play. But for many reasons, which will be told in the script, his somewhat two-dimensional but still understandable mother, the queen, has locked him up. And so it's Rose Lupin's quest to have fun, to hit the gritty, to dive into to play in the Tungus, to leap over Mount Jumbo. And it's about Rose Lupin growing up. And there's a little bit of magic in that.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting because it has this sense of, kind of growing up and then also the queen kind of letting go, like as a parent. Like, is there some interesting...
Or maybe not.
There's kind of interesting things in there. And then you also are really... It's really fun that you have so much identification with Douglas. Like, there's a lot of localization in terms of the story, which I find fascinating. And I'm assuming you did all that on purpose.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, the strange thing that happened to me in this, which, as happens to you, you're writing along, and I created these au pairs, Denali and McKinley, and they're in an identity crisis. And so they just sort of took off, and I actually just rewrote the ending this morning, but with permission to my amazing director, Roblin Davis. Thank you. but anyway, that's been super interesting to see how those characters in our world are playing out right now. And
yeah, as I was reading and I saw those characters, Denali and McKinley, I was like, wow, did she know what was going on? And it's like just interesting because it's always been an interesting conversation anyway. And you have it in there in a way, but they're kind of also these pairs you're talking about, and they're kind of, you know, they're kind of funny in the in how they're portrayed, which is kind of cute. I really love that.
Yeah.
And like
I mean,
you
they
said,
stand next to each other. They stand in front of each other.
Yeah. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of fun to hear on the air, and I'm sure people will get a kick out of that. And like you said, there's a lot of magic in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really interesting. I think, you know, when you start working with somebody and there was this kind of a sophisticated conversation around resolution at the end, and I'm like, you guys, it's magic and it's fun. And but I tried my best for some resolution.
Yeah.
That changed again. So what it's about for me is the magic and the joy of both growing up and in our special world that we live in, and what's unexpected and what can be expected, and there's that.
Yeah, so, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, again, is playing on Saturday at 5 o'clock, and we're talking about the Alaska Theater Festival radio plays. It's happening all weekend long here on KTOO. You can tune in at kto.org. You can go to kto.org, and on the website, there's a big button that says radio plays, and it has the whole schedule and also tickets if you want to join the cast in the studio and watch all the Foley artists do their thing, which is kind of cool. And Hetty, with the case of the sultry songstress, a detective so-and-so mystery. So-and-so is the character's name,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, his first name is So, S-E-A-U. His middle initial is N, and his last name is So, S-E-W.
That is really funny. And I just have to say, like, I know you mentioned it's sort of it's a play on the sort of the film noir kind of thing. And there's just some really fun, I just wanted to point out an example as I was looking through this. In terms of the kind of humor that you might find here, and Detective So-and-so meets Bubbles, who is the Miss Holloway, Bubbles Holloway, who is the
sultry songstress.
Femme fatale, yeah. Who's going to come in, and and he says, please take a seat. And she says, that's okay, I have two at home. Very well, won't you sit down? So that is kind of very funny. And then there was another one when he
that
says,
very sultry.
His thank you. He has a bunch of voiceover, and he says, luckily, I had a foolproof method to solving them quickly. And then he asks her, do you know who it is? And she says, no. And he says, this is going to be tougher than I thought. I just think that kind of humor is so fun. And it just makes me crack up. And then you had a line in there that I had to ask you about because I have no idea what it means. And I just want to prepare our listeners for this. But what is you flipped your butch?
Okay, that is what the cast has been asking me as well. Okay, so... So much of the language in this has kind of come from old movies, just that style of speaking. And there's a film that I love called Artists and Models with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, Shirley MacLaine's like second movie that she ever made. Mm. And there's a scene where he's ranting to Dean Martin about this bat lady that he's seen. And he says to him, oh, you're flipping your butch. And it essentially means you're out of your mind. You've lost your head. But I don't know what it means other than it's so fun to say. So I've started saying it, and then I wrote it in and decided to keep it, and all the other cast started saying it and thought it was really fun. So
yeah,
if you look it up, you can't find what it means other than what in context in that movie. So that's where I got it from.
That's kind of fun. And there's other great character names, Soapy Swigs, Puggy Holloway, Clem DeMinth.
Clem DeMinth is my favorite.
That's the nightclub owner.
Yeah.
Officer Sergeant.
Yes.
Which I think is hilarious as well. Like just a lot of fun. Can you give us, I don't know if we even need it because it is what it is,
yeah.
But like the plot, can you give us just a hint of what the plot is?
Yeah. So it's in the style of basic detective mysteries where it starts off in the, you know, private investigator's office and someone comes to him with a case and he takes it and he has to go meet all of the characters who could potentially be the person and has to suss out who it is. And Yeah, it's really it's lending itself to big characters is really what it's for, and there is a true mystery to it, and there's resolution at the end, and we find out who it is, but you gotta come along for the ride.
That's absolutely right, and that's at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, February 1st. You can listen here on KTOO. You can get the full schedule at KTO as well. That's kind of cool. And that's going to be a lot of fun. That is the Case of the Sultry Songstress, a Detective So-and-So Mystery. It's just fun to say that title over and over again. It's a tongue twister, but I like it. Okay, and then Frank Henry Koshk Tass.
Yes.
Your play is The Spirit of the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's – tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Oh, it's about these two twins. And they're out camping in their family cabin, and they wake up one morning, and one of the twins is gone. And so the other character is trying to find the sibling and is searching for the sibling and comes across different characters and animals that keep pushing along the way. Like I said, I was probably playing Zelda. Structurally, it's a lot like Zelda, based on, video games from when I was little, which had a big inspiration on me, writing dialogue and things like that and thinking of stories anyways. So it's fun just meeting the different characters that help guide along the way, give them things it might be dangerous, take this with you type stuff. So but it's fun. It's great. And I can't remember who's directing it. Do you know who's directing it?
I do know, and you know too. Her name is Erin Tripp.
Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah, I think I met her. But yeah, it's a fun play, and it was fun to see. It's so great to see the interpretations and different iterations, and I'm really excited about where it's going. And it was fun to keep revisiting this, and even after it got refined on Zoom, I think. We were finding new things that might adapt well to the radio, and Erin would send notes and
yeah,
suggestions.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, and it's really, it feels like it's a love letter to your kids a little bit. And
a little
bit. Also, it's really, also a love letter in a way to the land.
Yeah.
And you have, I think Eagle has a line in there when he's talking to the kids, and he says, Ha Ani, this is our land. And
yeah.
It's sort of about these kids and just what we have done to the land,
yeah.
And what our real responsibility to the land is. Obviously, there's adventure in there throughout,
sure.
But just in terms of the themes of the play.
Yeah, the values are the themes. There's stewardship of the land and taking care of each other and helping each other out and stuff like that that I think are important, and cultural values that, that should be universal. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you start with sort of a theme when you're writing and then – or does it come to you as you're writing?
I think it probably comes as it's writing. And, like I said, maybe this is going back a question or two, but it was also thinking of the values and writing those things and thinking structurally about, the storytelling aspect of this and, how we can tie this to the land, make it culturally relevant and place-based so that, especially the youth here will hear this story and go oh yeah, I've seen that animal. I know what this animal is. And they could picture, because they could look out their window and probably picture some of the places that are mentioned in this story.
Yeah, because this play has people, but it also has animals.
Yeah.
There's eagles and there's ravens and there's wolves and
yeah.
There's all the creatures
bears,
of the land.
Yeah.
Bears, yeah. Bears a huge part in
bears
this.
Bears are a big part in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. It's a really wonderful script. That will be playing Sunday night at 7 p.m. Here on KTOO. And I'm just curious for you, Mary, in terms of the same question I had there for Frank in terms of theme, do you think about sort of what the underlying message is that you want to get across before you start writing?
I really appreciated listening to Frank right now. I have think in the last few pieces I've created, themes are a strange word for me, and I don't mean to circumvent that, but I was thinking about values.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some values are super important for me, because that's how we live and act, but those have come out I finished something or a first draft and this is what's coming up for me, and maybe there's one line that it, or one action that expresses that, and it might inform it's super important for me to come back to, oh yeah, this is a key value or idea that's really important to me in this one. I think your answer was, do I start with that? I think I start with an idea, and I know that some character is going to help me figure out what's going to happen here.
Is it one of those things kind of like where when you're writing and like the, you know, people have said in the past, different writers have said, oh yeah, the characters start to tell me what this story is about.
Well, like sometimes they move and you listen to they take on this thing. And so you go and you're not going to write against this thing you've created or this idea, which is actually a person or in Frank's case, a bear or an mm-hmm. eagle.
Yeah.
I think what's super cool, I don't know what you guys think, is how much you learn that you didn't know you knew mm-hmm. by the end.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Except
I didn't
Frank
know that.
Probably yeah. already knew it all. But yeah.
First draft turned in.
Right, right. Always right yeah. on the money. Well, it's going to be awesome. It's this weekend. It begins tomorrow night, Friday, January 31st, with the War of the Worlds, a re-air from last year. But then the rest of the weekend, there are 10 like new plays, new scripts for the radio. Mm. Their productions are going to be happening. It's 5:00 and 7:00 each day, Saturday and Sunday. You can find the whole schedule at kto.org. And if you want to, on theateralaska.org, I believe the page has been updated and now there's full cast lists and creative people and who's doing the Foley and all that thing is on that website as well. And JunoGhostlight.com, you can also find out a little bit more information, and they have a link to that page as well, which is kind of cool. So it's really fun. And then again, on Saturday, between the 5 and 7 o'clock show, we'll be on the air with Juno Afternoon, a special Saturday edition, talking with the other playwrights from Sunday, which will be really fun. And I know those plays are going to be by Edgar Mendoza, Dave Hunsaker, and Anchorage playwright Kristen Ritter. And so we'll be talking to those three folks, as well as at least one of the students from the student shows that will have just have happened, which is going to be kind of cool. I'm really curious to hear, like, what does the student think of their production after mm-hmm. they wrote it and that whole process? I think that's really fun to get the students involved in writing. So thank you so much, Gunnar Cheech, for coming in and telling us about all of this information and your plays. And I think we're all excited to hear them this weekend.
Cool. Very excited.
Thanks,
thank
so are we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much. So, all right. Well, up next, we'll chat with Jen and Katrina from the Juno Public Library about upcoming events and have some book recommendations for your February reading lists. But first, a little sound. Wild. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On an overcast day in mid-October, a group of bird watchers cuts through the tall, brown, dead beach grass on the Mendenhall Wetlands in Juno. It's a remarkable day for birding, in part because of the exceptionally high tide. High tides average between 12 and 16 feet in this area, but this week they topped 20 feet for 3 straight days. These high fall tides are a benefit to fishermen at the end of the season looking to store gear like crab pots for the winter months well above the average high tide line. These high tides are also a benefit to birds of prey. High waters flooding the wetlands drive voles, mice, and other critters out of their nests and runways, forcing them to higher ground. The subsequent daily high tides repeat the process, making rodents more vulnerable to keen-eyed, savvy raptors. On this day, birders spotted more than 40 short-eared owls hunting the wetlands. Pygmy owls and marsh hawks were hunting as well. Another thing, it may also be a banner year for voles. Voles go through population cycles, peaking in abundance every few years. The local vole population may have been at a high peak with unusually large numbers scampering through the grass this year. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Ad have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I'm joined now by Jen Gardner from the Juneau Public Libraries. No, Katrina Wolford. Unfortunately, snow day. But Gunachish Igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in today, Jen. Welcome back. Wasiati, how's it going?
Thank you. It's going well. How are you?
I'm awesome. How's the library doing in all this snow?
The library is hanging in there. It's nice and cozy. I was out at the valley this morning, and it was beautiful watching the snow fall.
Oh, man, with those windows. Yeah.
Gorgeous. So lots of people in there just doing quiet work and enjoying the scenery. And downtown was lovely as well.
I love that. That's so good. So we have some events to talk about as we end the month and we begin February. Let's talk about what we've got coming up.
Yeah, so the first thing coming up is this weekend. We're going to be welcoming Baby Raven Reads back to the downtown library for a family event this Saturday, February 1st. That's going to be at 11 a.m., so before the library actually opens. And all families with children up to age 5 are encouraged to join for storytelling, songs, and other cultural and literacy activities.
That's awesome. And you do that in partnership?
Yeah, so this is with Baby Raven Reads, and so they come and lead all of the activities, and we support and host and have staff available for them as well. But this is all a partnership with Baby Raven Reads. And if anyone is looking for more information on that program, you can contact Molly Briggs with Sea Alaska Heritage, and her phone number is 907-586-9228.
Yeah, Baby Raven Reads is so cool. Yeah, it's a really good program.
Yeah, we've had them at the downtown library before, and it was just really wonderful seeing all of the kids and families engaging with the activities that they brought.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that starts this Saturday, right on the for February 1st. We're kicking it off. Okay, and then what else we got?
And then the following weekend, Juneau Jazz and Classics is going to be hosting a big band for little kids at the Valley Library. So that is on Saturday, February 8th at 9:30 a.m. So again, before the library opens, so we can be extra loud and have a raucous good time there. So at 9:30, there's going to be a music-themed craft, followed by a 10 a.m. concert for children and families.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I think they're doing a whole jazz week next week, and this is part of that.
Yeah, and that Saturday is actually going to be a busy day for us for family events. We're also hosting a story time and illustration workshop with Pat Race. So we're really excited to welcome him to the Valley Library. That's again Saturday, February 8th, and that's going to be at 2 p.m. Pat's going to read his debut children's book, The Big Bear and the Blueberry Moon. And then the reading will be followed by an interactive illustration workshop, which is designed to spark artistic imagination and learn about how a picture book is made. So that's an all ages program, and we're really excited to see a local author come and share.
That sounds so cool. Yeah, Pat Race is awesome.
Absolutely.
What else we got?
So we have a few kind of regular events. Our creative writing for adults this month is going to be on Monday, February 10th at the Douglas Library from 6 to 7. That's been a monthly event, so we'll continue that this month, as well as a chess tournament on Saturday, the 22nd of February at the Valley Library at 1 o'clock. So those both have been really popular for our adult audiences. And then for our kids, we have our weekly story times. That's Tuesday at the Valley at 11 a.m. and Tuesday at the Douglas Library at 3:30 p.m.
And of course, you can find all of this information at juneau.org/library on the calendar for all the regular events, but it's also cool to hear about the special events that are specific to each month.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always love coming in and sharing some of the highlights that are coming up. But if you do want that full list of events, as Boston said, go to our website. And if you go to our calendar, there's a print calendar option that will show you just library events. So that makes it a little bit easier to sort through all the different things.
Yeah, because I know you put a lot of other community events on your calendar as well.
Right. So anytime somebody books a meeting room or a study room, those are going to show up on the calendar as well. Mm. So there's things all day, every day.
All day, every day. Yeah. And okay, that's awesome. Yeah. And is that it for February?
There's a few other things coming up, but those are kind of the ones that I was looking to highlight today.
Great.
The other thing to note is if you want to stay up to date with our upcoming events, the newsletter is a really good way to do that. So if you go to our website, juno.org/library, there's a link on our homepage to sign yourself up with an email, and you'll get a monthly email that includes upcoming events, new books, just interesting things about the library and its resources. So I'd encourage everybody to do that, and you can also sign up at any of our libraries.
Yeah, and the library is really cool too, because if there's a book you're interested in, you can like put in to have the library maybe acquire that book.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, we call that a purchase request, and so that's a really great option if there is, for example, a new release book that you know we're not going to be able to get it from another library because it's a brand new book, and other people are going to be interested in reading it. Give us a heads up. There's a form online, and you can also do it at the desk at any of our libraries. Suggest a book for us to purchase, and anytime we can, we'll borrow from another library in the Alaska Library Consortium. That's such a great resource because we're just constantly shipping books back and forth between libraries all across the state, and that is a free service for everybody who's a patron in the consortium. So that's wonderful. And then interlibrary loan is also a really great way to get your hands on things that are in libraries down south that are willing to lend to us for free as well.
And then you can do it digitally, right? Through, is it the Libby app? What is that app that does that?
Yeah, so the Libby app is a great resource. If you have a library card with us, you can download the app or use the web browser, log in with your library card, and then you can access a whole array of ebooks and audiobooks for free. It's a library, so you will have a wait on certain books. Not all of them are instantly available, but you can filter your options by things that are available now as well. But that opens up a whole variety of options that may not be physically on the shelf.
It's interesting because you figure digitally you'd be able to access more copies of a book, but I understand there's probably, you know, rights issues and DRM and all that in terms of making sure that people aren't copying those books.
Right. I think that there are limitations set by that program.
Yeah.
So you don't physically own the copy, but there's a certain number that each library system can lend out at a time.
Yeah. And Katrina couldn't make it today, but she was going to have some book recommendations for February, which is also Black History Month. And you have one recommendation that you brought with you today.
Right. I brought this book that Katrina recommended. It is called Black Lives, Great Minds of Science. And this is a new book in our juvenile section. And it is a nonfiction book, but it's written in graphic novel format. So it's sort of like a comic, but it has different sections on different scientists and mathematicians and engineers who made significant contributions in their field. And I think this is a really fun book because of its unique graphic novel format. So it's really engaging. It's really accessible, but it also includes a lot of really good information, quotes from the scientists, timelines of their lives, and then extra notes at the end. So if you want to kind of dive deeper into the information, there's a lot in this little book. And this is part of a series. This one lives at the downtown library, so you can check it out in the new juvenile section right now. And we are going to have lots of great books on display at all three locations for Black History Month.
I love that. I figured you'd probably have some displays up and different highlighting some different books. And that book, again, Black Lives, Great Minds of Science, which you can find at the library. And who wrote that?
That is written by Tanya Bolden and illustrated by David Wilkerson.
Yes, always good to give a shout out to the authors. Jen Gardner from the Juneau Public Libraries, thank you so much for coming in and sharing some February details and a couple book recommendations. I love that. Gunath Cheesh for being here. We'll see you next month. And of course, you can find out all the events and more information at juno.org/library. Library. Oh, I was going to ask you, do you all have a Facebook too that you keep updated?
We do, yeah. If you look up Juneau Public Libraries on Facebook and Instagram, I am updating that regularly. So, yeah, please follow us. We usually have several posts a week. We post our events on Facebook as well. And, yeah, we'd love to see you on there.
I love that. That's so cool. Thanks for coming in, Gunnath Cheesh.
Thank you.
Up next, the Artists on Tap series at Alaska Brewing continues this February with artist Christine Carpenter. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. That was Samantha Crane and Yahtzeen with a cover of Look at What the Light Did Now. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Christine Carpenter is a multimedia artist and designer living and working here on Tlingit Ani. And Christine is the next artist on tap at Alaska Brewing's Tap Room. And this Saturday, February 1st, from 2 to 5 p.m., she will be showcasing her prints, notebooks, inks, and more. And you can find out more about Christine at her website. And Christine, will you tell us what the name of your website is?
Sure. It's Liaise Studio. Liaise is like the verb, I guess, for liaison, was the more popular version of that.
I see. That's what I was trying to figure out. And it's spelled L-I-A-I-S-E.
That's right.
So that's liaisestudio.com. That's where you can find out and see all of Christine's projects and history. And you have all kinds of things because you have this like interesting thing of, you know, sort of having like a yearly project almost in terms of like your the way you think and about your art and you kind of group it into different things. And I know the last one was the colors, right? The colors of Juneau. Was that what it was called?
Yeah. I had that show at the Jack in December.
Yeah. And so you spent, how much time did you spend putting that together?
I don't know how much time. It's hard to like quantify how much time you think and dream and about stuff. But I spent about a year collecting stuff to make the paints and the pigments, and then I took several months to make all of the like to actually paint all of the pieces.
Wow. Well, Gunnath Cheesh for being here. I sort of jumped the gun with my questions because I was talking about your website. We're also joined by Amanda Breslow from Alaska Brewing. She's the event coordinator and putting together all these wonderful artists who are coming into the tap room. And this is the Alaska Brewing tap room, which is out by Costco, right?
That's right. Yeah, the one in Lemon Creek.
The one in Lemon Creek. And it is sort of in that big side room that you have there? Is that where it is?
Yeah, exactly. So we have our main tasting room, and then when you go off to the right, there's the big sign, Brewmaster's Hall, and that's where we have the gallery set up. So
I
it's just
see.
Right off the side.
And this is an ongoing series that you're doing, and it's through the spring? Is that what you're going to do a couple more of these?
Yeah, exactly. It gets complicated once it's, you know, tourism
summertime
season.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we like to do October through April.
October through April,
yeah.
Which is kind of cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And so, Christine, have you ever had a show out there before?
I have not.
This
will be my first time.
Yeah.
We didn't tell you this, Boston, but Amanda and I are friends.
Oh, are we going there?
Yeah, from childhood.
Oh, no.
So
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. So Amanda asked if I would be willing to come in and show some of my artwork, and I was very honored that she asked, and very grateful that the brewery is letting me show.
So, all right. So it's a little nepotism is what it is.
It's like nepotism, totally. But the thing about it is I was really inspired. I'm glad that you brought this up earlier about Colors of Juneau. I was really inspired by that. And Christine, without me even prompting or anything, was like, I'm going to make a painting out of your beer. Boston, how rad is that?
That's pretty cool.
She literally took our smoked porter. There's a painting of it. I'm sure the prints will be available. But, like, no, they won't be. But you can, you know, admire the work. But it's just, like, I'd never even considered, like, oh, let's paint with beer. And Christine just does really, really cool things like that outside of the box. And like I said, I saw what she did with Colors of Juneau. I knew that she was going to do something amazing. But to incorporate our own beer at our own gallery, I think that's just so special.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I know that you sort of have, like, a mission, Christine, like, because you call it Liaise Studio.
Yep.
Liaise Studio. And it says in there somewhere, you define your work as a liaison between her community, the environment, and her creative practice.
Yeah.
Can you break that down a little bit?
I'm just really inspired by, I think, let me back up. I think a lot of times artists work in isolation. I think they are inspired by other things around them. But a lot of times I think artists work by themselves and kind of their own mindset. And I'm certainly guilty of this, too, that I am making things really just for myself, by myself, in this little studio. But I'm a designer by trade. Like, that's where I grew up being a designer and went to design school. And I really have been always inspired by the design process, which is much more collaborative and much more communal. And design work is not really possible to be done in isolation. I don't think good design is done in isolation. And so as I've fostered this art side of my life, it was really important to me to make sure that my artwork was a conversation and a collaborative process to do with the people and the things and the spaces around me. I think that my artwork in the last several years has been really defined by place, Juneau specifically, but that doesn't exclude things like my community members or Alaskan beer, and being really inspired by how can we have a conversation together in a space, even though I'm making art that might be something that I'm doing by myself, and like you didn't put your hand in, but the brewmakers have put their hand in my art now because their beer is now on a piece of paper now that's going to get hung up in their space.
I love that. That's so cool. And what is your primary, I guess, form? What is it that you're mostly working in? Are you painting?
Like my medium?
Yeah.
Like several years ago, did a lot of printmaking and working on a computer. And I think that was an easy entry point back into the art world because I hadn't really been in that world for a while. Because there's like the undo option in on the computer. the last several years, really since the pandemic, I've been doing a lot more watercolor work. My grandmother was a watercolor artist, and she passed away shortly before the pandemic. And I think it was a way for me to kind of connect with that, with my grandmother. And during the pandemic, when we were all really lonely and trying to find things to do, I explored more watercolor, and I've been really into that lately.
That's awesome. And so what are we going to be seeing? I know the show is up for the whole month of February. It'll be in the tap room. We're talking about Alaska Brewing's Artists on Tap series. Christine Carpenter is the artist for February. But this Saturday, you're going to be there signing stuff and being available for a few hours in the afternoon there. What are we going to be seeing at this particular show at the tap room?
So the show itself, there will be 10 pieces on the wall. Two of them are Alaskan beer paintings that I made from, one's from the smoked porter beer and one's from the winter ale. And then the rest of the pieces are pieces that I've made in the last year that are from my Pickles and Onions show, which I made onion ink for that one. That was at Alaska Robotics. And then the colors of, and then the rest of them are from the Colors of Juneau show, which was at the Jack in December. And then while I'm there on Saturday, I'll also have prints there for sale. I'll have, I just got some new Colors of Juneau pencil cases, and there's some notebooks, and I'll have some inks for sale as well. If you'd like to, explore making something out of some Juno made ink.
Are you going to make an ink out of the beer?
I did make an ink out of the beer, but it molded.
Imagine
if you
that.
Ever come to my studio, there's just a lot of like various stages of mold growing. I probably have some penicillin at this point in there somewhere. I don't know. The inks that I have for sale are Sitka Spruce and Western Hemlock is what I have right now.
Okay, interesting. And was it when you took the beer and made it? Because I think that's fascinating. I think people are going to be really interested in that. And what a great way to collaborate with Alaska Brewing on it. Was it difficult to make that ink?
Ink's pretty easy to make. You can make it at home anytime you want. You just boil down the thing that you have down until it's like dark enough, however dark you want it. The trick with the beer is that it has a lot of sugar in it. So as you boil it down, it starts to get really sticky. So it was kind of a delicate balance between, I wanted the ink to be darker, but I knew as soon as I was making it darker that it was getting quite sticky. And then it's just like, I mean, it's like, think about adding honey on top of paper. Like, it just never really dries. It's kind of like globular.
Oh, I love that word.
Let's add that to
write
the dictionary.
That down.
and sticky, and it never really dries. So that was kind of the balance and the challenge with making beer ink. But most of the time you just add, like if you wanted to make blueberry ink, you just kind of put it in some water or vinegar and you slowly kind of boil it down until it's as dark as you want it to be.
I love it. And maybe, Amanda, it becomes a precedent that people who are on tap at the brewery find some way to incorporate the brewery into some of their art. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, challenge accepted.
That's kind of cool. And so, of course, this is Christine Carpenter. She's going to be the artist on tap for February out at the Alaska Brewing Tap Room. It's going to be up all of February, but she'll be there this Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m., showcasing her prints, notebooks, inks, and more. And you can ask her more about how these inks are made and where you might be able to get them. You're going to have some for sale as well that you have made previously. And are you working on another big project for 2025?
Boston, I just finished a big project.
You need a break?
I need a little bit of a break. I am going down to Oregon and looking at gathering some pigments that I'm down there, more earth pigments.
Nice. So. Well, you can find out more and follow Christine at liaisestudio.com. That's L-I-A-I-S-E studio.com. And you can also follow Alaska Brewing on their Facebook page where they put these events that are going to be happening at the tap room. So thanks so much, Gunatheesh, for being here today.
Gunatheesh.
And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon on this snowy winter day. Tomorrow, Dave Emmert from the music show Alaska's Fresh Catch. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunatheesh.
KTOO Juno and KAUK Juno Ok Bay.